Inconceivable!
Brothers don't shake hands. Brothers got a hug.
Welcome to the Cheap Seats and Stickman Podcast.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to a very special live edition in studio of Cheap Seats and the Stickman Podcast. For the first time in our illustrious history, we're recording here in live and in living color. I, of course, am the Stickman, Jose Maldonado, and with me, as always, is my beautiful, big-breasted co-host.
Wow.
Mr. Cheap Seats himself.
Very big. Double D's, baby. Very big.
Jason Burgos himself. How are you doing today, my friend?
I'm fantastic. I mean, this is pretty exciting. I mean, there's a bit of a nervous laughter going on. I think you have to set up who our special guest in this three-way triple thread menage a trois is.
No, I'm enjoying this.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure you are, man. But, you know, there's a special energy in the room. And the reason for that is our very special guest, our good friend and fellow comic book fan, Eduardo Molina,
hey!
Eddie Molina, good to have you in studio, man. How are you doing, good
thank
friend?
Thank you, thank you. I'm pretty honored to be here, and this is actually really good. It feels good, and it's like good energy going on here, especially the double-breasted, double D, man.
Yeah.
Right next to me.
Don't touch them, though, please.
Oh, please, please. You know, keep it PG rated for the kids.
Oh, there you go.
See, that's the perks of being in studio. In case any of the fans were listening, he actually did reach out and touched Jason's
double. Yeah, he had a full Trump moment. He's,
It's right there in front of me.
So. This is the magic you just cannot do over the internet. So we have a very special show for you guys today. What we're going to be talking about is we're going to touch on a couple of tidbits. We're going to talk about the news going on with Deadpool. For anybody that didn't know, there was some conflict on set and on production, should I say, and some changes. I hear you, man. I feel the same way. So we'll get into that. We'll also be touching on, you know, a couple other things on help me out here, Jason. I'm sorry.
The Walking Dead season premiere.
Oh, how could I forget,
I was going to say it's double D's again. But
those, they're spectacular.
That's why I was distracted, man.
They're real and they're spectacular.
How could I forget the cultural milestone that was the Walking Dead season season premiere? I'm sure everybody is going to get into it. And but first and foremost, we have our top five comic book movies. Now, not just, you know, greatest comic book movies. We're talking about comic book movies that were influential to us, that hold a special place in our heart for different reasons that we'll all explain. Yeah. And so we're going to bring that to you guys today.
Howard the Duck won't be one, right?
Oh, I don't know, man.
I think that was Eddie's number one.
I'm looking at Eddie's direction.
We haven't discussed it first. Haven't gotten into it first.
That's right. No spoilers yet. No spoilers on the list yet.
You can't spoil this with.
So we'll just go ahead and get right into it.
Who's starting this off?
I think I will. I'm guessing since I already have the mic, I'll go ahead and kick this off with my number five now.
Tank Girl.
Yes, absolutely.
I knew it! Yes!
Mind. See, we got this freaking look right here. That's what I'm talking about, man.
Wow.
No, it was not Tank Girl. Sorry, Lori Petty. Not that big of a fan, but my number five is a little bit of a wild card. And even before the Marvel Cinematic Universe, even before Spider-Man made a ton of money, even before X-Men showed us what was possible, this movie kind of put Marvel back on the cinematic map.
I'm talking about suspense or not?
Yeah, and that's what I'm doing. I'm building up the suspense.
X-Men 3?
Yes. The Last Stand.
I'm so good. Damn it.
We can go ahead and scratch that one off. I'm talking about...
Thank you.
I'm talking about 1997's Blade.
Oh,
with Wesley
man.
Snipes.
Yeah. This is going to be very similar. God damn it.
Oh, man. That's what I'm talking about, man.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, now the first Blade movie, and you know, Blade 2 is an awesome movie as well. Trinity, not as much, and we've discussed that in private.
That's garbage.
Yeah, we can leave that one for another episode. But with Blade, Wesley Snipes taking on the role of the vampire hunter, half breed, and you know, this was at a time where Marvel was kind of struggling financially. Yep. They even had to reach out to DC Comics for a little crossover help.
They did?
Yeah, a little bit.
Oh, for when they did the comics.
With the comics,
So they reached to them.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
See, we're giving you new info here that you may not have known.
And please, fans, if I'm wrong, please feel free to hit us up and, you know, correct me on this.
I'm sure there's going to be a few.
Yeah, I'm sure. Absolutely.
That means somebody's listening.
That's always a plus. But yeah, now 97's Blade, that was the first true, really Marvel movie to hit the big screen.
Wait, 98, fact check,
98.
Dropped the fact check on you.
Oh, good lord. See, that's what we're here.
Here we go.
But with Blade, it showed that, you know, Marvel was kind of, you know, it was kind of testing the waters. And it was a hit.
Yeah.
And not only was it a hit, it was a really solid action movie. The fact that they would start with a R-rated movie to kind of test out the waters instead of going with a little more proven property was an interesting choice, but it worked out for them. And, you know, Blade was kind of influential to where some comic book movies weren't afraid to go a little more adult.
Yeah.
The action was outstanding. Wesley Snipes was perfect for the role. Yes. And Stephen Dorff, who, you know, his career has kind of teetered off since, but he was an awesome villain as Deacon Frost.
Oh, yeah.
Blade, my number five to start off this list.
I did like part two. Part two had a really good one.
Part two.
That your number five?
No, that's not my number five.
Let us know, man.
For my list, I don't know if we're going from top to bottom, but anyway,
I'm just going to fire
like up
your
to one.
Your least to best.
Oh, the least to best. Oh, yeah, man, yeah. So I got to like really think about it. Yeah. But you know what's funny? You actually brought it up. It's actually Howard the Duck.
Oh, my God.
Howard the Duck is one of my favorite. It was one of the first movies as a kid that I've seen, and I didn't even know it was a comic book at first. And I was very into it when I was a kid. Hey, you guys told me to bring out a top five.
The slow realization that he's actually not kidding. He actually is going with Howard the Duck.
I'm going with Howard the Duck.
I think we
can
stop the show here.
No.
Can edit this.
I told you, my list is pretty sure going
to
be different than both of yours.
Well, you know what?
I'm pretty sure.
Some variety to the list, and we'll give you that.
The show can only get better from here, honestly.
We are bottom.
Well, you said the bottom to top. I'm like, that was like the last one I had to think about. And I'm like, oh my God, yeah, Howard the Duck.
So please elaborate a little bit more.
It's one of those things that when I was a kid, it was like the first thing I've seen, like a duck in real life, like talking. And it's like, I didn't even know his origins. I didn't know anything. The villain scared the crap out of me when I was a kid. I'm like,
wasn't John Lithgow in that movie?
What's up?
John Lithgow, wasn't he the doctor? Tim Robbins was the doctor.
Yeah.
Tim Robbins was the doctor. I think Jeffrey Jones was the villain.
Okay. So Tim Robbins, I mean, early Tim Robbins.
Young Tim Robbins.
See, you can get into it, right? See?
Young Leah Thompson, fresh off of Back to the Future.
That's true.
But it helped me out when I was a kid. You know, I was always into art and drawing out, and you know, it was a really fun and interesting movie to watch.
All right.
So I can't really say anything bad. It was one of like my highlights as a kid.
Well, the fact that you can't say anything bad about Howard the Duck makes you one of the only people that can say
I've seen some bad credits about that, and I'm like, you know
some?
What? I seen some.
Most.
I seen some. But as a kid, it was one of my favorites.
I think that movie fully made George Lucas Star Wars man and only Star Wars man.
it was a little precursor to the prequels to where like, he needs to be reined in a little
bit. I'm pretty sure some fans out there is going to start writing about this too.
Picked Howard the Duck.
But you're
going to
get that one Howard the Duck fan that is your brother in arms and is like,
if you're out
justice
there,
for Howard the Duck.
Speak out. You know, don't be ashamed. I spoke out for all of us, for Howard the Duck fans.
Right.
So Howard the Duck is one of my top five.
Fair enough, Emo. And Cheap Seats, Jason, what's your number five?
I got notes here. I'm very serious guy.
You have a two-page note here.
I got two pages here. Stapled.
You fans are missing. He's being modest.
You got facts? What kind of facts you have?
I went to the ultimate source of movie information, IMDb, obviously.
Holy Grail.
That's like encyclopedia of movies. But also, very anticlimactic, my number five was also Blade. I mean, 1998. Oh, wait. I got some interesting facts for you. It was directed by Stephen Norrington, who would go on to direct League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
So I think it's safe to say he peaked that Blade.
Yes,
okay.
Peaked big time. Also fascinating about this, it was written by David S. Goyer. David S. Goyer, if you don't know, he's the same guy who wrote, he co-wrote The Dark Knight, Jumper, Blade 2 and 3, Ghost Rider Spirit of Vengeance, and his coup de grace of writing, Batman versus Superman.
Oof, man. We know how divisive Batman versus Superman is, but I think.
But, well, yeah. I mean, I liked it as a fan because we're talking about things that are most influential to us, and it was a big deal. It was an R-rated superhero movie. I mean, at that time, superhero movies have really died out. I mean, what did X-Men come on, 2000?
Yeah, 2000.
So at that point, I mean, Spider-Man was still years away. Mm-hmm. You know, Blade really made Hollywood realize, okay, this genre has some value to it. And, you know, it was a precursor to the R-rated movies we're seeing with superhero movies. That was the first one that showed how it could be done. I mean, another thing is, as a vampire movie fan, they took vampires and made it cool in a different way. It wasn't all, you know, passionate and beautiful as it always is. Like you mentioned, Snipes was fantastic. And another thing, I mean, the fight scenes and the music.
Yeah. The soundtrack.
The music was fantastic.
Absolutely. So, the soundtrack.
So I mean, Darude, I believe, is one of the songs in that first club fight scene.
Yes.
With the showers of blood.
That's awesome.
I mean,
It really did set it off, you know, then they just took off running from there. And it's interesting that you mentioned that, you know, it was Marvel, you know, kind of testing that out, because at that point, Hollywood didn't really know what to do with comic book properties. You know, we had seen some clunkers in the past, and this was, you know, fresh off Batman Forever, Batman and Robin. Yeah. Oh. The Superman movies were long gone with Quest for Peace.
Batman Forever. Oh,
so this kind of, you know, legitimized comic book movies as a potential force in Hollywood, and as we see now, that's definitely the case.
And it was weird, too, because they wanted to try out the genre, but they wanted to go something so obscure that almost the most people wouldn't even know. Like, they took something that's already a property that they can just mine, but it was something so, like, C-level. Like, Blaine's a C-B-level kind of character. So when it came out, there was a large majority of people that did not even know this guy was a Marvel character who was fought Spider-Man and major characters.
Most people thought it was, like, another vampire movie.
Yeah, but so it could be, in a way, a nice little kicker to fans of the Blade, and the other people that don't even know, just it's just a cool vampire movie.
Right, it's a good entry point for casual fans.
Exactly. Number five for me, Blade.
Ah, solid pick, man. Now it's interesting that we had, you know, already had some overlay with our picks.
I think it's gonna be many overlays.
I believe. I think so.
I think I'm gonna be the only one that's gonna throw that curveball.
Well, you already set the tone with Howard the Duck.
Yes, I did. Thank you very much.
Tank Girl better not be too. Oh, my
so
God.
You ruined it.
Oh boy.
No, is Johnny DeMonica comic? Because then I think he picked that too.
Keanu Reeves is a walking comic book character, so it counts.
Constantine better not be there either.
Ice-T was in there, right?
I do like Constantine, but it's not going to be on my list. Yeah. I'll give you that.
Honorable mention.
Now, if we had an overlap with number five, which I thought would be a kind of a wild card pick, we're probably going to have some overlap with number four, because I know you're a fan of this too.
Here we go.
I'm going with 300.
Honorable mention for me. I didn't have that.
We're good. We're good. You know, with this pick, I almost went with Sin City. But I went with 300 because personally I think it's a better movie.
Yeah, for sure.
And the reason I chose it is something that we touched on a little bit with the Blade pick, where this is a comic book movie for adults.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? This is a hardcore R.
That's
tons
only
of violence.
Adults.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. It's like tons of violence, tons of, you know, sex, nudity, adult themes. But it was a smash hit when it hit in the theaters.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And not only that, it set the template for, you know, how you follow the source material to a T. Some movies have done it to a fault, but this done it perfectly. This is the pages of 300 brought to life.
Yeah.
It's an awesome looking movie. This is back when Zack Snyder wasn't a punchline.
Oh.
It was actually
the follow-up to Dawn of the Dead.
Yeah,
so, I mean, he was on a roll.
He was on a roll.
He
was on
fire.
This one, he was the next big thing in directing. And this movie's a visual marvel. Mm. I mean, you see the effects. Before the slow motion became a cliche, before the drowned out colors became a distraction in Batman vs. Superman, it fit this perfectly.
He did. While George Lucas was the innovator of really using green screen, it was good. It was nice. It was cool. This guy revolutionized the concept of using green screen to an artistic level. And just amazing. You wouldn't even know that they're just acting in front of a screen.
Yeah, you hadn't seen anything like this before. You know, George Lucas tried it with the prequels, but this here, it worked a lot better.
Yeah.
It fit it a whole lot better. And the end result is a movie that still today is a solid flick. Anytime it's on, I put it on.
Yep.
It's one of the top comic book movies for me and hugely influential in the industry. 300, number four pick for me. So, Emo, what we got for number four for you, man? And it better not be Tank Girl. It better not be Howard the Duck, which we already had at number
Come
five.
Come on, it was Howard the Duck was my fifth one.
And he's
going to
pull out the Fantastic Four, the Roger Corman version.
Yeah. Oh, he did choose like X-Men 3.
X-Men 3 should have never been made, the old one.
Batman Forever.
No.
I know how much you love Arnold, man. Batman and Rock.
Yeah.
Superman 4, right?
Oh, wow.
With the Weird Atomic guy.
Nuclear Man.
Yes.
Nuclear Man.
How about Meteor Man?
That was a good one, though. No. My number four pick, I know I was going to throw another curveball in here. It's going to be The Rocketeer.
Okay.
Is that a comic, though?
Yes, it is.
Okay. It was an actual comic.
I looked it up
before. Verified this.
Yes.
Research your sources.
He did the research.
I looked it up, and it said comic book movie. I was like,
because you know the interwebs are all truth, and when you look it up,
sure. But I see some comics out in Midtown Comics. Yeah.
You know what?
I see some comics.
We will
love it. So I tell you, my list would probably be the only curveball compared to the two of you. And, you know, one of the reason I picked The Rocketeer is because another fan favorite when I was a kid. And I've always been into flying, and this man had a jetpack.
Right.
And
he just flew, and
he was a superhero, like, on a jetpack. I'm like, who does that? Like, really?
Yeah.
And it's like old-fashioned. There's no superpowers involved.
Yeah.
There's no super strength. There's no auto. No, it's a man in a rocket, and he's there flying. I'm like, it's awesome.
And also, I mean, what's crazy about that, it's so crazy dated now, but for that time, it was good special effects.
Oh, yeah,
that was cutting edge, man.
Yes. And the thing is, I had like a whole bunch of critics telling me, oh, no, The Rocketeer sucks. The Rocketeer, you know, it's not a good movie. But I'm like, I went beyond. I went to see it, and I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I had a good time watching it, and me as a kid brought like a lot of imagination, and it's again a man in a jetpack. I'm like, I was like, oh my god, this is like so incredible.
Nah, I'm with you on that one, man. And you know, the, like you mentioned, the retro look of it kind of lent to that. You know, I love that kind of period piece. And it was really well done. I'm with you on that one. The Rocketeer is kind of a forgotten classic.
And also influential to come to see because it was a superhero movie based in World War II. That same director would be specifically chosen to direct Captain America for his that look and to give it that look, which he did.
Yeah, once you once you connect those dots, you definitely see shades of the Rocketeer in First Avengers. So.
Alright, so I'm going to go. My pick. I'm going to go to my paper.
Oh, here we go. Notes here. No, we don't have any papers. We don't have any diagrams or anything.
I feel so insignificant.
This is. I have my little reminder notes here, whatever. This dude got like a 5-page thing going on.
This is
here.
The journalistic integrity coming out, right?
He got an LED screen going behind him too.
I do. I have the laser pointer and everything going on now. Now my pick, recent movie, but I absolutely loved it. Sci-fi. I'm a sci-fi nerd for sure. Okay. My number four. Guardians of the Galaxy.
That's a good one.
Because you know what? I like that one. This one is a mix of influence and just pure joy. Now, I love the movie that, you know, after I watched it, for me, it was on the level of Avengers 1. You know, there's been some movies that have surpassed the Civil War.
It's, that one was also a good one.
Yeah. And it was fascinating about it. It came out in 2014. It was a perfect blending of superhero movie and sci-fi just on a, like a Flash Gordon-ish kind of crazy level. It made Chris Pratt, you know, a star.
He's
a superstar.
Household name now, and it started there.
And how many movies can take a living tree guy and a raccoon and make them like household names?
I am Groot.
Exactly. So, you know, it's funny, funny and fun, visually appealing, groundbreaking. And the thing that always stands out for me, if there is no Guardians of the Galaxy, there is no Deadpool, there is no Suicide Squad. For anybody that likes those movies, please thank Guardians of the Galaxy because those wouldn't have happened.
Yeah.
If not for that movie.
That's awesome movie. I agree with you with that one.
Yeah, for sure, man. It's hard to argue that the influence that Guardians of the Galaxy had because it took characters that, honestly, God, even personally speaking, knew very little about Guardians of the Galaxy. And me being a comic book fan, there was casual fans that I'm sure maybe even heard of this team. Yeah, yeah. They were like, well, you know, what is this? What is that? And it's one of the most beloved.
I was one of them.
Yeah, you know what I mean? It's a lot of people that walked into it blind.
I knew about them before, so I will take credit.
Well, you're the one with the 5 pages of notes, so we expected that.
Before the movie came out, I Guardians of the Galaxy, who are these guys? I had to look it up. I'm like, oh, they seem like regular old like superheroes. I'm like, oh, so this would be an interesting movie. And I saw the trailer, and I'm like, oh my god, this actually looks really good.
And also, it was I'm trying to think of a movie like what's that movie with Heath Ledger where he was in Night's Tale?
Yes,
Night's Tale. That was unique in that it took a genre that always would have a specific type of music and it used rock music blended. This was the same thing. This took a sci-fi movie and blended like 70s hits onto it in a completely original way. And just it's very few movies that blend dialogue, look, visual, and music into this immersive, fun experience.
My favorite was the mixtape. That was awesome.
The fact that they made the music integral to the plot, which unlike a movie like Suicide Squad, which had a great soundtrack, but it was just kind of throwing things at the wall to make it sound cool, Guardians of the Galaxy made it work to service the plot, and that was really awesome.
And we were talking about that. Yeah. Like, the whole thing going on. That was awesome.
All right, so super solid pick with Guardians of the Galaxy at 4. With my number 3, I'm going back a little bit to my childhood.
Okay, good. I like this.
Yeah, you know what I mean? This is the movie that was, you know, as a kid.
How was the Duck 2?
Yes, dude, you are reading my mind here, man. Dude, can you not get away my picks before I give
them? That's what I'm talking about.
But, you know, of course, any comic book fan, you know, can think back to when they first started getting into comic books.
I think you're going to steal one of mine. I think we're going to be in the airport and we're going to overlay right here.
Yeah, this is the only one we're going to overlay.
All right, so we might all have this on here. And it might be, you know, which one. Because what I'm talking about is the Superman movies of Christopher Reeve. But I'm not going with the original. I'm going with Superman 2.
Oh, I see.
Now, are we overlapping here?
Actually, I was going to pick the... I'll pick... Can I say mine right now?
You destroyed one of my top picks. My top picks are going to just have nothing left.
Oh, man. I think that's the only one that we're going to overlap. Look at this, man. See, Superman, that just speaks to the awesomeness that is Superman.
All right, everybody. The show's over. We had a good time.
We hope you enjoyed this live episode. We'll be back with another one, boy.
I guess I got to say mine is to talk about it. It was part one, though. Part one actually really started off for me and everything.
I can see a lot of people pick that, but it wasn't that for me. But no, Jose, just continue. I'll get to my thoughts eventually.
It's really hard to choose between the two. Because Superman 1, obviously, you know, everybody remembers the iconic poster, "You'll Believe a Man Can Fly." And we did, you know what I mean? The first one kind of introduced Superman to a new generation. It made it show that it's possible on the big screen. But for me, Superman 2 is where it all came together. You know what I mean? It got the origin story out of the way, which is a lot of a problem with a lot of comic book properties.
Yes.
And it just got them down to Superman in action. And it gave him three awesome villains to fight.
Yep.
The action scenes were revolutionary. You know what I mean? I mean, product placement aside, where he's getting thrown into Coca-Cola signs and Marlboro trucks. But, you know, the fight on the streets against, you know, General Zod, iconically played by Terrence Stamp.
Yep.
And Ursa and Grodd. It was just, you know, next level stuff. For anybody who wanted the comic books to jump out of the page and go onto the screen, Superman 2, you know, more than any movie of its time, showed that it was definitely possible. And Superman 2, for me, kind of, you know, is the peak of the Christopher Reeve era.
And it had such a hard act to follow because the first one, wasn't it nominated for Best Movie?
No, it was nominated. It got like a special Oscar for special effects, but not Best Picture. I think it was close.
But I mean, it was a big deal, the first movie. It's a tough act to follow, and this was a time where Hollywood didn't like to do sequels too much. That sequels weren't a common thing back then.
Right.
And also, it did something that was great for the time, but sent the wrong message by creating its own villains that had not existed to that point. And it sent a message like, oh, we can make whoever we want. And it took away from the usage of good villains, but in this case, it actually worked out real well for them.
Yeah, you know, it's funny that they kind of, you know, gave a little teaser to them three because they got sent to the fans. Zone in part one, and then they got busted out in part two, so it's almost like foreshadowing, which kind of, you know, if you look at the Marvel Cinematic Universe now, you know, that's hugely influential. So.
And they could have brought that on in any part, really, because they could have held them back from part two and part three.
Completely. Yeah.
And I'm sure we'll discuss more from Superman 2 in a little bit, because there's a lot more to talk about, but yeah, that's my pick. Eddie,
well, like I was saying, part one, you know, you started off part two, but part one was very influential to me, because, like, when I was a kid, I was a big superhero fan, and Superman was one of them, you know.
Okay.
For DC Universe, and it just, you know, opened my eyes, like, with Christopher Reeve as being Superman, and he did an awesome job as being like a regular Clark Kent to being Superman, and the effects back then was, like, totally different from any movie now, and it was, like, so simple, like, straight to the point, and, you know, not to take away from part three, like, I was, like, conflicted with, like, all the parts, you know, Richard Pryor played awesome. Part in part three.
That's the only good thing about
that's
that kind
of where it took a little turn.
Woman at the end.
Hey, you know what? That's cool.
Yo, you know what? You know what's the best part of that movie? Exactly. Where he fights himself.
Oh yeah!
Yes, that is legit.
That is legit.
And it was like a whole bizarro thing going on.
You gotta love Superman with 5 o'clock shadow, man.
Oh,
it's just
awesome,
like,
man.
That's
like
the sign of any bad guy.
Flicking the peanuts in the bar to the mirrors. I'm like, oh, it was cool. But, you know, part one actually opened up with a lot of stuff for me. You know,
so it's one is your number three.
Number one was my pick.
I'm really surprised that you guys had them as high as I thought. They'd be lower, but.
No, we got a lot of love for Christopher Reeve, especially recently.
No, Christopher Reeve is awesome,
movies.
Man.
Yeah, it's a breath of fresh air, especially with some of these, you know, CGI heavy effects movies that are coming out now. Seeing the practical effects kind of lends a little charm to them.
Exactly.
That still holds up.
That's what I said, like so simple effects, nothing over the top.
Yeah, yeah.
Simple, straight to the point.
Yep. Well, for my number three, relatively recent, but, you know, seeing the age of these movies makes me just further feel that much older. My number three is also a sequel of a big deal series. It's not Spider-Man 1. It's Spider-Man 2.
Uh-huh. Wait, which one?
The good Spider-Man 2.
So we're not talking Andrew Garfield here.
No,
we're
him, but no. We're not talking hack level, you know,
was a good one.
Hey, man, I'm with Eddie on this one, man.
That was a good one.
Again, that's
sorry.
A conversation for
a
another
one.
Day, but we're talking Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man 2 here.
The silence is just me trying to gather myself.
Yeah,
the first one was a huge moment because you had X-Men knocked it out the box. Good, solid movie, big money. Mm-hmm. But this was the one that just, bam, superheroes can be a blockbuster. Like, they can be the biggest movies of the year. And up until, for I think, what, maybe 4 or 5 years, that was the highest grossing movie like the last, like, 20 years.
Yeah, I'm not sure if it was the first one or the second one.
Oh, no, it was the highest grossing weekend. That's what it was.
Okay,
it was the best weekend ever for a long time.
Yeah, the first Spider-Man movie was the first one to crack triple-digit millions for the first weekend.
Yep.
So, yeah,
and
you're
so
right.
It was
you're
a big deal. So following it up with the second one, you know, you can go... this is a history of at this time where sequels went bad. Like, the Batman movies, some of them went bad. You know, at least the second one was good. But, I mean, this was so good in that, you know, it took, you know, elements that was so good in the first one, the fun, the humor, the heartfelt stuff, and just took it to another level. The action was big. And what I love about this so much, and it's still a standard bearer for me, is it had such a good villain. Yeah. Like, it was a villain you fell for.
Doc Ock, yeah.
Yeah, it was a villain that you understood, you know, and the special effects were so good, the fights were so good, you know, it took CG action to another level, you know, at that time, and, it, you know, it was just so significant for its time, such a big deal. I mean, it really, I think it laid claim and let everybody in the entire industry know superhero movies are legit. You know, there's a humongous fan base for them, and they're here to stay, and you're going to see a bunch more to come, which we, you know, we have seen since then, and that's why Spider-Man 2, number 3 for me.
I'm just so happy you didn't pick Part 3. Part 3, oh my God, that's a whole different conversation.
Nah,
now.
We're doing
top 5 uninfluential, you know, non-influential.
That's what I'm saying.
That's on there with a bullet.
Oh, that'll be God.
Now, we also see Howard the Duck come back on there, you know?
Hey. Howard and Duck and Rocketeer are way better than that one, all right? Thank you.
I hope you don't choose it as your 5 and your 1, because you love it that much.
Double dip, man. Why not? But
You know what? Just for that, I'm going to do that. Why not?
Oh, look at that, man. I'm going to snatch that index card out of your hand.
Top 2 time. This is where it gets real big.
We're getting up there,
man. It's like the championship rounds now.
We're talking about the cream of the crop here in terms of
top 3
influential towards us. And this one here, my number 2 pick, is influential to me and the industry just because I couldn't believe that they pulled it off the way they did. And that's the Avengers of 2012. You know, the Marvel Cinematic Universe started, you know, with Iron Man in 2008. They tested it out. It was a huge hit. Robert Downey Jr. knocked it out the park. Incredible Hulk followed, but, you know, it didn't start legit until all the sequels started to come out. You know, Iron Man 2 started to come out. Then Thor got his own movie. Captain America got his own movie. And they were all really quality movies, so you're wondering...
You're looking at notes?
No, you know, I was looking at my... In this card, have that list of my movies. Thank you very much. This is my index card, and this is his... See how light, how louder?
Yours posted.
Mine's is like, you can't even hardly hear mine's on the mic. No.
We are a little intimidated by the amount of research you came into this with, man.
But I already messed up in my order, but you know, keep on going.
Oh, yeah, sorry, you're number 2.
You're interrupting him. Don't worry about what I have in my hand.
It's time, man, but...
Go ahead, Avengers, go ahead.
You know, it was just amazing to see how they brought it all together, you know what I mean? Like, yo... Because each movie was quality on its own, and it's a lot to kind of package into one deal, and the Avengers pulled it off. It was an incredible comic book movie. For my money, still the most entertaining comic book flip, you know what I mean? Like, in terms of entertainment value, you know, pound for pound, the Avengers is it, you know? And
well,
it shows that it can
to
be
have
done
like
at a
the
high
separate
level.
Movies they had, because it makes it a whole lot easier to bring them together.
That's exactly right. You know, it kind of, you know, did the opposite of what DC was trying to do now, to where it introduced each one on its own. And then they brought it all together in this amazing package with an amazing villain. You know, they picked the right villain for that. Loki.
Yeah.
Tom Hiddleston with his charisma.
And that could have been mad since he was already used in a movie. That's, you know, that's not, you know.
Yeah, and, you know, and people just wanted to see more of him.
Yep.
And, you know, it also set the blueprint for the Marvel Cinematic Universe to come and introduce Thanos.
Yep. And the stones, it kind of started foreshadowing a little bit.
Yeah, so, I mean, the Avengers, you know, what can I say? It's, you know, one of the highest grossing movies of all time. It's the bar, you know. It's number 2 for me. It just really made it a happy day to be a comic book fan.
Yeah,
oh, that's good.
All right, man. So Eddie, number 2 here.
What I was talking about my index cards, thank you, is because I messed up the order. You know, Christopher Reeve, the Superman one, was actually number 2.
So you're scribbling on that thing too.
So this one is I have to name it because now I messed up the order. It's like the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
This
yes.
is the worst
the movie
ever.
That we mocked earlier in the podcast.
Exactly.
We made fun of.
Is your number 2.
You made fun of Howard the Duck.
Okay,
I told you my list is a curveball.
You can tell us.
To whatever you guys think.
You picked the wrong Stephen Norrington movie. It's okay.
No,
you can tell us. You can
that's a really good
you know
movie.
Mean?
Think
Blade
about
was
it.
The one you were going for. You
visually,
weren't for Blade.
Visually, it's really good.
Are you confused?
Look how they did. No.
Do you think it's supposed to be the
five hate? No. See, that's maybe the ones you hate.
All right, I got to hear this. Please tell us, why was Jekyll
and Hyde was like one of my highlights as a makeup artist. Like, the way they transformed this guy into the beast that he was.
Oh, I thought you meant this guy's toupee, because it was really nice in that movie.
Well, that's fine. It could be a toupee.
The giant top hat that transformed along with him.
It was really good. You can say whatever you want. I still enjoy the movie to this day.
I personally couldn't get past Captain Nemo's Nautilus, you know, going through the streets of Venice without breaking a thing.
That was...
Did you see the size of that ship?
That was good navigation.
You tell me.
He's a good driver.
How?
Did you see that?
Yes, I saw it, and I cannot believe it.
Did you see his car?
How can a ship that big go somewhere canoes can barely go through?
The city of Venice is in ruins after this ship. Ruins.
That ship... A submarine ship, hey, it was really good. He drove that really, really well. Just visually, everything was really well done. I liked it. People say bad things about it, but if you think about it, everything was good.
When I think about it, I think everything was bad.
You know what? In all fairness,
my list is a curveball from everybody else's. So, hey.
That was like a knuckler.
That's why that one
was. That was an Ephus
match. That's my number three, and the Superman was number two. That's why I had to bring it out there.
We did say influential to us, and by golly, Emo really went with that theme, man.
Yes.
This is really sticking to it, y'all.
I'm not going for like the highest grossing movies. I'm not going for like. It's whatever I liked and whatever was influential to me, and that was influential to me.
Do you have any more influential stats on it? Or your
post-it? You have a five-page... My thing is just a list of what influential movies
list
I have.
List the top five movies
and
you
And I'm
hate
going from the top of my head, like, what I can remember from it. And visually, that movie was well done for me, like, in the visual aspect.
There are aspects I do like. I did like Dr. Jekyll. I thought that was good.
Yes, and to see it wasn't all CGI. Like, it was all him in a suit.
I mean, the only thing is the guy he fights at the end just looks weird. The red dude.
Oh, yeah.
And you know what?
That's a guy on heavy steroids.
Sean Connery was a good pick. He was just like 25 years too late. You know, when you can noticeably see that it's stuntman Sean doing all the stunts, it's like, ah. But, you know, I mean, it's not... there's good elements. It's not a disaster.
It's brought a lot of different characters together to form a team, and for me it was actually a really cool idea for somebody to bring that into movies. And the visual effects, I keep saying that, and I liked the way the visual effects was playing off.
That's fair. I mean, the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen was always kind of the Avengers for book nerds, so that was kind of cool to see on the screen. I gave you that.
At least it brings attention to those books, which are hugely unique and interesting books. So at least somebody goes and watch that. Now, you know, my number two, I'm hoping it's full JFK layover. Overlay, and I hope I got both your picks. I'm thinking that this might be it.
All right.
My number two, 2008.
All right, I'm out.
The Dark Knight.
Ah, okay.
Did we get a layover? Overlay?
Damn.
Mm-mm. We did not get
No,
because
he's got Batman Forever or something, so that's a different Batman movie.
How can you not like the nipple suits? Those nipple suits are awesome, damn it.
You just like Jim Carrey in tights, man.
Oh, who doesn't?
I mean, I think this is... Now, it's not my favorite pick, but I think still to this day, you can argue this is the best comic book movie ever made. Like, because this is the first time a comic book movie was just, oh, that's the best comic book or adventure movie of the year. No, that was one of the best movies of the year in general.
Mm-hmm.
Like, a lot of people thought that should have been nominated for best movie. I mean, not to win, but to be in the running for it. It was that good.
As a matter of fact, it was one of the reasons that they expanded the list from 5 to include
5,000.
Yeah, exactly.
It was really good.
But, just unbelievable. It took what was good about the first, just took it to a whole other level. Honestly, to this point, and Ben Affleck has a lot to live up to, it is the quintessential Batman movie to me. Like, it's based on a more realistic life, but it is Batman to the fullest. I mean, it has, along with maybe being the best comic book movie ever, it has maybe the best comic book movie performance ever.
And who could we talk about here? Who could we be talking about here?
Michael Caine, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
Fantastic. His Alfred, it just broke my heart. But no, the Heath Ledger was unbelievable. I mean, just one of the best performance of the year. If he could have been nominated for Best Actor, Joe, he might have won that too.
He did win Best Supporting Actor.
He won Supporting.
He
so,
yeah.
I mean, it just unbelievable movie. I mean, he made huge money. It finally made people go, okay, comic book movies are a genre, but they are just good movies in general. They're not a niche kind of thing. And it was, to me, a complete, utter game changer for the entire genre that is comic book movies.
Yeah, man. There's no getting around it. Dark Knight is a classic of the genre. Mm-hmm. And like you said, it's not just a great comic book movie. It's a great movie.
Yeah.
I mean, a great detective movie, a great action movie.
Yep.
It's just, it's hardcore, you know, tires to the floor, just, you know, hitting on all cylinders.
And we were talking about that movie earlier, like Walking This Way, too, and I didn't even know it was going to be his top pick, but...
That's number two for me.
It's number two, so you still got one.
One's already been ruined, but anyway.
Oh, that's right.
But, you know, it's
But no, I was saying, I didn't know it was going to be a pick for you, but we was talking about that movie on the way over here.
Because
that's a really good movie.
It's a movie I love, but it's like, that's the first time I think, if you go back, that it just had, one of those first comic book movies that it started really bringing in insane acting talent.
Yeah.
You know, that late, like, X-Men had good talent. It had Halle Berry. Hugh Jackman was unknown at the time, and Patrick Stewart was a big deal, but, you know, they really didn't get a lot of big acts. That was the first movie where, you know, I think actors saw, oh, you can do this, and it's really great material, and it can, you know, for a talented, creative person. And ever since then, and then Iron Man with Robert Downey, it's just comic movies start, you know, it's gotten to the point where everybody's been a comic movie or show at some point. So, but yeah, number two for me, Dark Knight.
The Joker played an awesome part.
Heath Ledger was incredible.
And that's one of the things that we were talking about on the walk over here. Like Heath Ledger, like playing as Joker.
Yeah.
Awesome.
It made Jared Leto's job that much harder to have to follow that.
Yeah,
you
for
know?
Sure. I mean, you know, Heath Ledger, and he was following an iconic performance by Jack Nicholson as the Joker.
Yeah.
Yes.
But at least, he was lucky enough to have been, 15 years separated? Something like that?
Something like that.
Maybe more.
Like, almost
this
20
guy, years, Leto, had to take on the greed of DC and do it, so the 2008, so seven? No, six, 8 years later.
Eight years later,
he had to top that.
And on top of that, by most reports, he got handcuffed, you know, and edited out. You know, it's kind of budget. Hopefully, he'll get a proper shot.
Yep.
In a Ben Affleck movie, because you know he does deserve it. He has some interesting things.
He might not though, because Deathstroke's going to be the villain in the Batman movie. So I don't know. He's still not going to get his own movie. But you know, in a weird way, that's why you maybe should have even used Joker, because he's already been in two movies. Are you going to have a third movie with a third Joker as a third villain? It's been done already.
You had to switch it up.
Yeah,
that's true. It's like the Green Goblin with the Spider-Man movie.
Yeah.
I do not want to see him touched for a while.
Exactly.
So. That's fair. All right. So for the number one pick now, being that this was influential movies to us, this one's a very personal pick.
I think you're gonna overlap our minds.
I'm not sure, because it's same character that Jason had for his number two, different movie. One with the 1989 Tim Burton.
I thought about that.
Batman. See,
I
told you you're gonna overlap.
We're overlapping on this
one.
All right, so we can talk about this together then. Man.
Overlapped our minds, man. Come on.
Tim Burton's Batman, 1989. I was the perfect age. The perfect storm for this to hit. I was 8 years old when this movie dropped.
Dang.
It was the biggest thing going. This was everywhere. You see the gold Batman shield on movie posters, on the subways.
Yeah. I think Michael Keaton nailed it too.
That is so funny, because there was such an uproar. Before there was, you know, the internet with all these comic book nerds coming up in arms over every casting decision, Michael Keaton was not the choice that fans wanted to see.
Because he was Beetlejuice.
Yeah, you know
what I'm saying? Batman, this is Beetlejuice.
Mr. Bob.
But
this dude, he was so pitch perfect as Batman and as Bruce Wayne. You know what
yes.
I mean?
He is he your favorite Batman? He's not my favorite Batman.
He's still my favorite Batman.
He is mine.
He's still my, you know, I love Christian Bale to death.
I didn't like his Bruce Wayne.
I liked his Bruce Wayne.
I thought his Bruce Wayne was too cold.
No,
it wasn't Playboy enough for me.
He separated Batman and Bruce Wayne. The Playboy one, I think he did a really good job. It wasn't like a lavish, like he's out there spending
his
money.
But that's Batman. Batman's got to put up a fake facade that he is kind of loud.
But he did put himself out there. He went out there. He just in suits. Went
I mean,
to
he
parties.
Stooped Vicky and Catwoman. I mean, he didn't really mess around too much.
You know, what I liked about Michael Keaton's Bruce Wayne is that, unlike, you know, Christian Bale, who's the perfect kind of playboy, kind of, you know, happy-go-lucky, and Val Kilmer and everybody else who was charming, he was eccentric.
Did you mention Val Kilmer, really?
Yes, I did. You know,
his Batman wasn't terrible.
It wasn't
George.
We all know George Clooney was the man of all Bruce Wayne's, but I like that this one had a little bit kind of a kookiness to it, kind of an edge to it. It was a little bit different, and you figure somebody, you know, like Bruce Wayne, who had that much money, that much to spend, lived out in the boonies in this, you know, in this, you know, isolated mansion, would be a little bit off. People saw that in him, and you know, he kind of brought that. You know, that scene with the Joker in Vicky's apartment where he just kind of snapped at him, you know what I mean?
You want to get nuts!
Yes! Come on! Let's get nuts. You know, and
that was a good scene right there.
But see, to me, that was too much Michael Keaton.
Yeah, you know, that was very
Beetlejuice.
I give you that, but I think he brought something to Bruce Wayne that we haven't seen anybody else bring.
It was
the
different.
Same way, you know, it was something different. The same way Jack kind of brought what he brought to the Joker role. You know, it's super iconic. This is a role that people were dying to see, because Jack Nicholson at this point was at the height of his powers. He was Jack being Jack.
Yes.
And there's a lot of Jack. The same way Keaton brought Keaton to that to that scene especially, this is a lot of Jack in makeup.
And the point that you make about Keaton being disliked, the Jack Nicholson getting Joker was overwhelmingly loved, which is interesting, because I wouldn't have thought of him if I was an older man, but everybody loved it.
Yeah.
Jack Nicholson being a part of Batman was like, whoa. And they had to pay out big time.
For sure. And he's still seeing residuals. He's still seeing freaking money.
You know
what
thing I love and hate about that movie, though?
What's that?
Prince soundtrack.
Ooh.
A little weird. Really? I don't know. Really? Prince as the soundtrack of Batman is a little strange.
How could you not like the parade song? Come on now. Trust.
Yeah. Like, I like
that
it, but I don't
that was
like
a funny scene. Come on. That was a good
it
one.
It was supposed to be funny, though.
This is the Joker we're talking about.
He was like, expressing his art, his inner art in it, you know?
In terms of influence, this movie just cannot be denied. This, you know, from the debacle that was Superman 4, this brought comic book movies out of the ashes. It was a huge monster hit. You know, adjusted for inflation, it's still one of the top movies of all time. It was everywhere. It, you know, it changed how comic book movies touched merchandising, because this was a merchandising machine.
Yes.
And, you know, it was just, it's very Tim Burton-esque, but he brought a vision that's yet to be replicated. I love the sets. I love everything about it. Tim, you know, this was the movie that, for me, made me a Batman fan, and that's very important to me.
Yeah.
And I'm sure it did a lot for a lot of people as well. That's why I got this in mind.
Also of note, still maybe to this day, with the Superman theme, that Danny Elfman Batman theme.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
One of my favorites ever.
Yeah, for as much as you don't like the Prince soundtrack, the Danny Elfman score is one of the greatest ever put to film. Yep. Absolutely. So.
See, since you picked the same one as me, you know, it's not everything that I had to say, but also, like, one of the things that surprised me with my first watches when I was a bit younger was that, you know, it was Batman was killing in the movie.
Yeah.
You know, something that, you know, you don't see him doing in the comics or anything. But no, he was out there, like, cracking necks. And even, like, suppose he killed the Joker at the end of it. And
It's funny you mentioned that, because there was a huge uproar with, you know, why Batman was, you know, kind of going a little too far in Batman versus Superman. But revisiting the Tim Burton movie, he was killing people back then.
Exactly.
So.
He was, like, going way beyond, like, we know what Batman is known for.
Right.
And but everything about that movie was actually really well done, with Tim Burton's, like, flair with the whole darkness in it. And you know what I do like the way that he separated Batman, became separated Batman from Bruce Wayne. It was a nice separation. I think he did a great job in it. And to this day, I still like my top picks.
Yeah, I can't argue. I mean, very anticlimactic for me, but we already talked about it. And my number one is Superman 2. Now, this was the first superhero movie I really liked, and this was what. Like, I don't like Superman now, and I really haven't liked Superman since then, but that was my guy as a kid.
Oh, yeah, man.
You
please,
know?
This is your top pick, man. It's all good. Even though it was mentioned earlier, please, play it up.
19
here, Jay. Add on to it. Add on to
Come
it.
Come on. What did this mean to you, bro?
We have your statistics down, you know, five pages.
That's enough. The big
there you
note.
Go.
This
on
one
us,
page
on
is just for this.
Yes, go ahead.
But, I mean, you know, just, it was so meaningful. You know, still to this, that's crazy that a movie in 1980. Now, part of it is the aforementioned Zack Snyder's, you know, fall from grace. But a movie from 1980 may still be the quintessential movie of a character.
That says a lot.
Like, for me, Dark Knight is the quintessential Batman. That could be debatable. No problem with that. But for most people, this Superman was the main one, and especially Part 2, for a lot of the same reasons you said. And the reason why I like Part 2, because as good as Superman 1 is, I'm always a stickler for, well, I lost, so I'm just going to go fly around the planet and make the time go back.
Redo.
Yes,
classic.
There was none of that in this. In this, it was, he's a threat. I mean, there's a humongous threat. It's a connection to his home. You know, there he has to be this champion of the human race that he isn't, doesn't get to be, because he gets to be the hero in very... in silence in the first one, because Lex Luthor is a small time threat that's all in the shadows. He's out in the public. He's in the middle of the city. He's saving people in buses. He's flying. I mean, you further the love story with him and Lois. I think in that one, that's the one where he meets her in the roof and they fly off, or is that one?
That's one.
That's
one.
That's one.
Okay.
That's one.
Right,
this is the one where he kind of gives up his powers, and that's an interesting part of the movie too, where he kind of touch on that. The pressure that he has to carry of being Superman, and you know he's willing to give it up for Lois, but then he realizes it's his responsibility.
Yep.
How he reversed it with the villains. That's awesome.
And what's also is Lex Luthor in the movie. Gene Hackman's great, and he becomes like this facilitator type that they just kidnap him.
Australia.
And use him. And there's nothing better than that scene where the three bad guys are in the Daily Planet. They're threatening Perry, and Superman shows up, and it's like, oh, and this guy's fighting three people.
Hello, Zod. Want to step outside?
Yes!
You know, stuff like that is just so cool, man.
I mean, he's flying, and there's a hole in the building. You know, it was just unbelievable. And still to this day, one of my favorite actors ever in a superhero movie. He's up there with Robert Downey and Chris Evans and more. Even I like him even more than Hugh Jackman. Like, he just embodied everything you want to be Superman and what Superman should be. And I will watch the movie and be you know, fascinated and entranced by his performance. It's amazing.
Wait, that's something you guys got to explain to me, because you guys didn't mention this in either one. It's like, when he takes the S out of his chest, he
that was ridiculous.
No. What is
and
that?
It becomes a saran wrap.
No, it wasn't a bad thing. It was out of nowhere. I'm like, wait, what is that?
And it's not to say this was a perfect movie. Yes, there are some flaws.
No, yes. That made a whole lot of no sense.
And wrapped him up, and then all of a sudden it just disappeared. I'm like, what is that?
They created these bad guys, but they were so good. Zod was such a good bad guy and so influential. The comics created him. Comics said, oh, you know what? We need to put him in. Why haven't we used that? I mean, it just, you know, one of a kind, great. Like, you felt the threat, you know. Fantastic.
One of the most quotable movie characters in comic book lore, you know. You still see Neil before Zod signs at Comic Cons to this day. He was super iconic. Again, it's hard to argue with Superman 2 as an important comic book movie. So.
See, we all had good choices.
Yes, allegedly.
I told you my choices was a curveball compared to both of yours. Yeah, okay.
I would say I'm going to go watch Howard the Duck now, but I'm not. I'm just not going to.
You better.
That was like, I don't know. I mean, that was like 12 to 6 curveball. That wasn't like a nice little gotcha. That was, and then that, you know, out of nowhere.
I'm sure there's going to be a lot of fans out there that's going to start commenting on that part. But hey, it was a good movie.
If you're all shaking your head, like we are over there, we understand why.
Please feel free to hit yourself.
So what do we want to move to next? Do we want to break into Walking Dead, or do we want to talk more Deadpool?
Let's go ahead and get into Walking Dead, just because this was a huge deal over the weekend. In case you were living under a rock, Season 7 premiere, Walking Dead.
Just warning you now, spoilers.
Yeah, huge spoilers are coming if you do not know.
Rick died!
Yeah, sorry. You had one job, man. Can you not mention that before we get the spoiler alert out there?
Michonne's the leader now. You know, she's dating Negan.
You knew it was coming. You knew it was coming.
But the funny thing is, I'm not much of a fan. I don't watch this on a regular basis. I don't run home to watch this. I was watching because Jose here was actually watching it. He saw the ending of last season. Then I was like, oh, whatever. I got interested, and I started watching the first episode of the next this new season. I'm like, holy crap, did this just happen?
Yeah, it's actually awesome that you're here to talk about that from a casual fan's perspective, because, you know, for anybody who follows the show, season 6 ended with the cliffhanger of the introduction of the villain Negan, who anybody who read the Walking Dead comic books, Mr. Jason's here raising his hand, he's the villain, he's the guy, you know what I mean? And, you know, everybody knew he was coming, and they knew what was coming. So they left it in the cliffhanger of who is Negan going to off from the core cast. And we got our answer with the season 7 premiere, and it just broke hearts all across the country. Jason, if you want to talk a little bit about it.
I mean, it's something. I mean, I've read almost all the comics, and I'm just like, I'm getting the last graphic now. So I've read everything. I've read everything up to Negan, what happens with him and everything. And, you know, this is something as a fan I've been waiting for like 2 years now, and I really want to see. And the thing I loved, a lot of people were upset by how the season ended. And I wasn't upset at all, because it harkens back to classic TV. Classic TV leaves you on a cliffhanger. That's the best way to end a season.
Sure.
Make them
come back. Will the dynamic duo come back from this to the next
back week? Back to back, you know. So, you know, I love how you did it. So, and, you know, what's crazy is this is going to be huge. I mean, I read a story today. Now, they haven't gotten the full ratings of the show out yet, but they had one very obscure, weird stat. They had a stat for what the show did in Central Florida.
Central, that's not the woods, man. Don't you knock Central Florida.
Central Florida is just a hub for television and culture. But Central Florida, supposedly, the ratings, I think, jumped by 150,000 just in that small section of one state in the country. Now, 14 million people watched the show last year. I don't think it would be shocking if it jumped up to like 17, 18 million. And 17, 18 million for a TV show, you have to understand how nuts that is.
In this day and age, with so many options and so many distractions for it to pull that kind of an audience, it's a huge deal.
To like compare, like, that's popular shows like The Flash, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D., they get around 3 to 4. Those are popular shows that have steady, consistent fan base, and they get 3 to 4 million. So to add 10 plus million to that, it's a staggering number. But, you know, what I just thought, and I thought it hurt me, it made me mad and infuriating, but it was some of the best storytelling you will ever see on TV, based off a comic book, it was just spellbinding TV. Amazing. That's just amazing.
I just can't wait for Rick to do something to this guy. What's that guy's name again? I don't
know. Negan.
Negan. I can't wait to like for him to get his. Oh, yeah. That's what I'm waiting for.
And that's the beauty of it.
And it's watch it on a regular basis. Like, and you gotta tell me about it.
And trust me, if they go by the comics, and that's the great thing about the show. They deviate and they keep a lot of stuff in the comics. There's a lot of things in the comics. Like for example, Daryl's a major character in the show. Not even in the comics.
Right.
Doesn't even exist in the comics.
He's an invention to the show.
He's the man. The comics, man, I agree with you. I can't wait to get Negan gets his, but it is going to be a slow burn and it ain't going to happen soon. Oh, sure. They're going to go through a lot before it.
It's going to be a hard watch. Yes. And, you mentioned, keeping true to the comics, but yet changing things up.
Yep.
And it was personified in this episode. I guess we can get into it. It wasn't one character that got offed. It was two.
Yes.
And we're talking about
Abraham. And I'm surprised with the second one because that came out of nowhere.
But that was the traditional one.
That's the whole thing. He's the one that got offed in the comics.
Yes.
Same way. I heard about that. Like, he did. And he's actually in the show for a very long time. And he was like supposed to die a long time ago, I guess.
No,
he dies in this exact moment in the comic.
Yes.
Oh, same exact
moment. It was for issue 100 the same way, unfortunately.
Yep.
But you're right in that it was surprising to where, Abraham was the first to get killed and you thought, all right, well, that means that this character is safe from that, but nope.
Yeah.
Glenn got it too. Glenn got off.
But it's just the way it happened. It's like, he gets like his, like, it's somebody, Daryl punches him, and then I don't know.
He doesn't even get to punch him. He got shut down real quick.
Oh, he lunged out.
Yeah,
he got a sock and he didn't get
it. I thought he didn't get it. I thought he got
punched. He got punched.
Oh, man.
He got punched in the face.
He got stopped. Yeah, that's the thing. He got stopped.
No, he got hit.
I did.
He did.
Daryl got up. So Daryl went in. Wow. I'm like, that's the freaking man.
Things like that is why Daryl is such a beloved
character. But on that level, they got what they deserved.
Yeah.
But that's true. But I'm thinking,
I'm thinking Daryl's going to get hit somehow. And I'm like, I don't know what. He just said, well, another one. He goes, wow, of a Glenn, right?
But that's
like,
the thing.
Holy crap.
I have forgotten to see the finale. He said, if anybody gets up, I will shut that SHIT down. I forgot about that. He reminded it. And that's what the thing about a great villain, and that's why it's great writing, because if they would have just, they could easily be like, oh, these characters are beloved. Let's just change it up and make them last, and we'll find a way around it. No. This show takes risks, and I love it, just like the book. Mm-hmm. And that's the why he's a great villain. He didn't like say, okay, no, we showed him enough. But they got what they deserve. We'll get them back. No, you messed up. Another one of you are dead, and it won't be you. You'll be guilty for the rest of your life because you are the cause of another man's death.
Yeah, now Daryl's going to live with that.
And
he's
a father.
Hate that.
A man who is about to be a father and a husband. You cause him dying, man.
Dude, he's there trying to speak to his girl while he has his head bashed in and his eyes is like out. I'm like, holy crap, what is this?
And that is another thing about this show. You mentioned how it's spellbinding television and it pulls no punches. Because when Abraham got off, he got off, and Abraham loved that dude. He went out like a champ.
Dude, awesome.
Awesome last
nuts.
Line to the end. But with Glenn, with Abraham, they showed him get off, but they kind of cut here and there.
Yeah.
With Glenn, we saw every gory detail, and it was so rough to watch, especially since he was such a beloved character from the beginning. To see him get his like that, man, you don't get that in many shows.
Is he a character in the comic books?
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
He's an OG. I mean, I think now after his death, there's only about 3 or 4 characters that are from the very beginning that are still left. Like, he's an OG. That's why it's such a painful death to the fans, because Abraham is a key character, but he came late in the show. He's developed a fan base. Glenn, Charlene, we talk about it. He was the third character introduced that's like still around, a key character. There was Morgan.
Yeah, he was from the beginning.
And he met him in Atlanta. Like, he was there from the beginning. Like, this is, to see him die, and like, that's what, the acting grabs you, because all the actors, and you they built such a good relationship with him and Maggie, and the two actors have good chemistry. So watching her cry, and then the one difference in the comic is, in the show, he says, Maggie, I'll see you again.
I'll find you.
Which is amazing. That's smart writing, too.
Such a great one.
In the comic, it's almost more heartbreaking because he's like, shaking and like having a seizure, but he just, this guttural yells out Maggie's name
and then
gets hammered. And in the comic, it's just even more painful, but either way, so well done.
So wait, clarify this. Like, Abraham was like, in the same time that Glenn died,
no,
or that he died.
That's why the show differs. I'm pretty sure Abraham already was gone by that point.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh,
and,
wow.
In the comics, it was only Glenn that got killed at that moment.
Yeah.
So with the show, they added Abraham, kind of suckered everybody. All right, Abraham's the one to get killed. Nope, you get Glenn too.
Yeah. Wow. Full on wrestling swerve.
Yeah, absolutely, perfect. Man. Vince McMahon would be proud.
Yeah.
And it's a total debacle.
Total.
But yeah, that was crazy. Yo.
And just one last thing to touch on that real quick. You mentioned the acting. I gotta give Andrew Lincoln a ton of props on this episode.
Oh, man.
He was so good and so heartbreaking as Rick.
Yes.
You see him just run the gamut of emotions. Oh. Towards the end when he was broken, you believe it.
Yes.
It was so tough to see. So tough to see.
And I mean, Jeffrey Dean Morgan, I mean, I knew when they casted him, he was a good Negan. Because as sick as he is, he's one of my favorite characters in the comic. Because he's a sicko with charisma. Mm-hmm. And the thing about him compared to the governor, for the people that watch the show, the governor was really a crazy man. He's right. Really sadistic. He's unhinged. He's already lost it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He's unhinged. Negan knows what he's doing. He's smart. Yes, he's a psychopath. He'll kill you, but he'll kill you with a purpose, in that he's trying to survive. He's an alpha. He's going to do what he wants to him to survive and live comfortably in this world. He's not going to just ramp willy-nilly kill people. There's a reason to it. And just think about it. I've had this debate with people. If your friends got randomly killed, like 20 of your friends, by somebody sleeping in the night, chances are you'd probably want to kill somebody too. And the fact that he only did 2 for 20, he took it out easy on them. And in a way, they're lucky.
The fact that you're trying to justify Negan's actions,
psycho,
oof,
planning.
I will give you credit for that. That's the beauty of the show. Because Negan is such a putrid character. But like you said, it's spellbinding. And in his mind, justified.
Yeah.
The fact that he was like, get my axe. Like, I was like, oh my God, he's going to break him. But he didn't break him until the very end.
Now, Rick is incredible. Rick's been through so much in that show.
He's
been incredibly durable.
That's the whole thing. It's like, he's ready to pop if he hasn't popped already.
Power to him, man.
Get my axe. I'm like, man, I'm going to shove this axe somewhere. That's for sure.
All right, so the next little bit of news I guess we could touch on here is for going back to the comic book movies. Deadpool had a little bit of news this weekend, and it's not good news, unfortunately. Seems there was a little bit of clash during the production between star Ryan Reynolds and director
Tim Miller.
And unfortunately, it resulted in Tim Miller leaving the project. And it seems that the big sticking point was the casting of Cable.
Yeah. There was other stuff, too, supposedly.
Really?
Yeah. Did you get the story I sent you from Humberto Gonzalez?
Yeah.
I mean, Humberto Gonzalez, if anybody doesn't know, he's one of the premier sources in Hollywood to get a lot of comic book-related stuff. I think he worked for Latino Review at one point, and now he works for The Wrap. And he was talking about, it was the casting. Two, they were differing on the direction of it. Now, in the quotes from the article, they said that Tim Miller wanted the more stylized version. Now, that doesn't mean it's not going to be funny or anything like that, but the great point they made, and that's why it makes it all the more disappointing that he got fired, is that Tim Miller supposedly did the special effects for free, using his own special effects studio. Because remember, this is a movie on a budget, and 20th Century Fox, no matter what they tell you, they had no promise and hope for this movie. They didn't expect any expectation. They were just thrown out there and see what happens. And he did that, and Ryan Reynolds supposedly wants to stay more raunchy, comedy thing, and that's fine. If it ain't broken, don't fix it.
Mm-hmm.
But it was also that, and the other interesting thing, and this is what really kicked Tim Miller out, is that when the movie came out, big hit, Ryan Reynolds, as every big star does, renegotiated his contract. In his contract, he now has control over casting and creative control.
How is that?
Exactly.
That's dangerous.
Now, when you have an actor,
why would you give him that power?
Because that's how Hollywood is. Hollywood panders to the star less so than the creative, the visionary force behind it. Now, he was a key part, but everyone involved with this says Tim Miller was just as equally important a part and is just as equally a big comic book fan as he is.
Yes.
And
the movie was awesome. I'm like, why would you give that one actor that much power? Don't get me wrong. He's a great actor.
No, he's not.
I saw him from...
He's good as Deadpool, but other movies...
No, Deadpool is good.
Yeah.
What's that? Oh my God, what's the movie that he's in college?
Van Wilder.
Van Wilder, thank you.
That's another
favorite of mine.
It's a solid, funny movie. He plays the same role. He's not an actor with range. He plays the same kind of snarky, sarcastic guy.
But as Deadpool, he was awesome.
Yes.
That's
his career-defining character,
yes.
But he's not a guy that has range to really do anything really, high... thinking,
That's
why. That's
why he didn't do so well in Green Lantern, because that wasn't like his role at all.
Yep.
But
how
Deadpool
is not that?
On the money, but like to give him that much power over the creative feel of it, I'm like, that's just that just boggles my mind.
For a man that decided to do Green Lantern and Wolverine Origins, he's had some bad movies in his time.
So bad. He needed this. This was kind of the movie that put him back on the map.
Yep.
And to his
yes,
credit,
so why would
he
ruin it?
Yeah, he fought for it. And I guess now he's a little power hungry on that. But Eddie, I know you were a really big fan of the first one, you know, with Tim Miller involved and everything like that. Yeah. So, you know, how are you taking this news? You know what I mean? Like, are you a little worried about the project now?
I really am, you know, at this point, because the first movie was actually really awesome. You know, I was like, I'm not into the Deadpool comics as most people are. And the little bit that I know of him, I'm like, oh, I showed it off in the movie. Right. You know, like the way he is, like the way the comic relief is, the way that he knows that, oh, he breaks out of the fourth wall. Mm-hmm. It was all done really, really well. But just to give that actor that much power and to maybe ruin the next movie, knowing that this is what made him put him back on the market, I'm like, I don't agree with the decision they made at all.
I'll make this point, and you know, it's not a death knell for the movie, because this is not uncommon in Hollywood where you have an actor that has a lot of influence on a movie. I'll give you two big ones. Tom Cruise has long been a producer on Mission Impossible movies, and they have been very successful, and they've almost gotten better with time. Now, he knows he's got a good job. Two, for all the faults I see with the series, Vin Diesel is a producer on the Fast and Furious movies, and these are huge hit movies. I think they're so flawed, it's ridiculous, but they fit.
How could you not like the flying cars?
I was just gonna mention that. You didn't like that? That's futuristic right there.
Who doesn't have a race car, helicopter, you know, gunship fight in the middle of Los Angeles and no one gets in trouble?
That was great.
Who doesn't do that?
At this point, they're the Avengers in cars.
Yeah, I agree. So, I mean, you know, these movies are work. And Deadpool isn't going for an Oscar. So, I mean, it can easily work. And you can find a director who can be just as good. But, you know, it's almost like a sports team. You know, the Cavs got lucky in that LeBron's in charge of the team and it worked out. Yep. But most times when the players are running the thing, you know, players need to play, coaches need to coach, you know, and that's how it usually should be. Because for every Tom Cruise and Vin Diesel, there's a bunch of people that didn't work out with.
Right. But it's like you said, like, if it's not broken, why fix it? I'm like,
exactly.
And it works so well with the director being in the first movie. Yeah. So why change it?
Well, they also said in the Umberto Gonzalez story is that they have friction, those two. They supposedly weren't big fans of each other. You know, so that probably influences it too. But even if you don't work good, you know, you're not best of buddies, you're making an amazing product. You have magic on this thing.
Yes.
Figure it out. I mean, figure it out. And that's where the studio needs to step in and say, guys, come on, we could try to work this out. But they're... A studio will always side with the star, and that's what happened because of his contract. Tim Miller got the, and he left on good terms because he's probably going to work at Fox or something else. But it's just unfortunate.
Yeah, it leaves a bad taste. Really, and you know, if the second one fails, does the blame fall on Ryan Reynolds?
It will. I mean, it's going to. And the funniest thing,
I wouldn't want that burden.
This is where fans, some fans, can be a little silly. I don't know if you saw it. There was a story that came out on several news sites that a fan put up a petition to get Quentin Tarantino to direct it.
Which
makes no sense, whoever put that out there. You're out of your mind. Quentin Tarantino's a director that has complete control of his movies.
Yeah, and the instant he signs on, this is no longer a Deadpool movie, this is a Tarantino movie.
Exactly.
Right? And, you know, Tarantino is an awesome director, has singular vision.
Yes.
He's not right for this project, folks. He's not.
No.
So that's a bunch of nonsense.
That's another thing we was talking about on the way over here, too. Tarantino has his own vision, his own direction, but I just don't see, like, a Deadpool coming out of his, like, imagination.
No. It would be crazy interesting, don't get me wrong, but I don't think it's a good fit.
Yeah. No, not at all. I mean, do we want to talk about the Netflix news, too?
I guess we've got
a good hour. I mean, we could just throw it in at the end. It came out today. Netflix is going to take on $800 million of debt. Now, that sounds bad, but it's real morally, you can look at it more like $800 million of extra cash that they're going to use toward their original content. And if you've noticed, as a Netflix, you know, if you have it as a subscriber, the movies on Netflix aren't very good. Now, documentaries are fantastic.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
But the regular movies are pretty slim pickings because their original content is so fantastic. They're on par with, like, HBO making good series now.
Yeah, Netflix, pretty much their bread and butter now is their original shows. Mm-hmm.
So they're going to use that money and to make their good shows, you know, better shows. And you know, I think for a lot of people, the rates are going up. But just to think about it, in the story I was reading, they supposedly gained 3.57 million subscribers in the third quarter of this year alone.
Ooh.
That's 3 million new people just this year. So if you're thinking, what would probably be around them? Because that's a fascinating thing. The Netflix is almost like the magician of, you know, the TV movie industry, that they tell nobody anything. It's all secrets. It's all shadows. So no one really knows subscriber numbers, rating numbers, anything like that. But even if you factor, let's say they have 20 million subscribers, which is pretty good because they're in Europe, you know, Canada, the U.S., 20 million subscribers paying $12 a month, 12 times a year. This is big money.
Yeah. That adds up real quick.
It does. And then also, they were saying, like, to give you an idea how much money they used, that they need this $800, supposedly they signed Chris Rock to a comedy special deal for $40 million.
Wow.
They also have a new show, which I think is supposed to be based on, like, 90s hip-hop or 80s hip-hop scene called The Get Down. Rumors are it's costing $10 million an episode to film.
Really? What? You know what? Yes. I see like the first three episodes of Get Down. It's really pretty good.
Well, then the money's being used well.
Yes, that's so
much. I haven't finished it yet. My brother's seen all of it, and he tells me, you know, it's a really good show going on. You know, and so, I'm the one that told him about it.
Yeah.
I'm only up to the third one, but it's actually really good.
I mean, and they have so many shows. I mean, Narcos is very popular, Peaky Blinders, and me, and also What's the Greatest Thing as a Fans. If you love the Netflix Marvel shows, you're gonna probably get a whole bunch of them because that's one of their top deals, and that's what bringing. Because even in their shareholders' statement, Luke Cage was one of the things mentioned as the reason for getting 3 million new subscribers.
Really?
Nice. That the Narcos season 2 and Stranger Things. Which, if you haven't seen Stranger Things, you're missing out. You're missing something in your life if you haven't seen Stranger
Things. I already finished the second episode. You're the one that told me. Jason is the one that told me about that. Told me it was really good, and another close friend of mine actually told me it was really good. I'm up to the second episode, and actually, it's really interesting.
Fantastic.
It gives you like nice 80s feels of the music and the effects, and everything's really good with that one so far. So, there's no negative, I can't say anything negative about it yet.
Oh, yeah, and you'll be amazed to hear that I actually have watched 2 episodes of Stranger Things.
Wow. You're watching Netflix episodes?
Well, absolutely.
I heard a story.
For the whole listening public, Jose really doesn't like TV shows for some reason, especially Netflix.
It's kind of a running gag in these here parts, but. Yeah, as much as, you know, I mean, come on, as much of a comic book fan as I am, I should be all over these shows, but I'm just, you know, come on, I'm just lazy. You know, what can I say?
Well, how hard is it to press play?
It's very hard, you know.
Down, side to side, you know, they have the arrows to guide you on the remote.
Is that what they
And
have?
It says okay in the middle.
I thought they were just, you know,
play.
Like, you know, that's elaborate volume buttons.
I think the fact that Jose has not seen either Daredevil shows, Jessica Jones, and Luke Cage, we can give him some time
Blasphemy.
The fact that you see that, I think that might be more offensive than Eddie's pick of Howard the Duck in the top 5.
Are we still going back to that?
Those are some harsh words.
We already talked about all that. You guys already talked about that. No.
Oh, bro, we ain't never going to let that one go,
nah.
Bro.
Nah.
Hey, it was one of my top 5s.
You know,
it's still staying up there.
You're owning it, man. I give you credit for that.
You already recorded, save it, send it. That's it.
I had a good time doing this.
Oh, this was
fun.
Blast.
Oh,
man.
No. Thank you for inviting me. This actually is a blast.
You're a very good guest.
Well, thank you. I appreciate being here.
No problem, man. Eddie, where can people find you, man? Is there anything you want to?
Oh, that's right. They can find him because he doesn't use social media.
Wow, we're going to talk about that now, huh?
Mr. Molina, you're off the grid, son.
There we go.
So being that you are so elusive, where can people contact you?
Can they find you on the dark net, maybe?
What?
Are you on the dark net?
Dark net.
Yeah, do you go there?
No, sometimes.
I heard there's a popular attacker named The Jester. Are you The Jester?
He has a Bitcoin account that he set up.
Oh,
that's what's going on.
Wow.
He's still going on with this, huh? So we went from his Netflix watching to
this.
That's how we do it. Like Donald Trump right here, buddy.
Smoke signals work for me, I guess. You want to talk about that?
Please, smoke signal Eddie at any point.
Wow. At smoke signals at smokesignals.com.
There you go.
For me, you guys always know Twitter, Cheap Seats Chat. You can always look me up there. Jose?
I'm at Stickman Cinema on Twitter. You can hit me up on Facebook, Stickman Cinema. A Facebook page, and please feel free to hit us up, and we love hearing the feedback on the show. If you have comments, corrections, you think we're idiots, please let us know.
I don't think I want to start anything since you guys made fun of me about Howard the Duck. I'm sure I'm gonna get a lot of hate mail. Like, Howard the Duck, really do that? Really?
And we'll be sure to forward it to you. We'll show you.
Hate mail?
Please.
What is this? The 90s?
Oh, wow. There you go.
Hate mail? Do you have a mailbox? Maybe that's where you can get a mailbox. Eddie has a P.O. box.
I do write letters.
You can send fan letters to Eddie at, you know, tell us your P.O. box.
We're on the Merv Griffin show now. That's great. But as always, we thank you guys for listening to the show.
Guys, thank you for having me. It's been a blast.
We got to do this again.
Awesome, working with you guys. Awesome, thank you.
We got to bring you back, man. And, you know, until the next time, ladies and gentlemen, this is the Stick Man, Cheap Seats,
and Eddie.
Signing off, man. Thank you for listening. We'll catch you guys next time, guys. Say goodbye.
Later.
Kinshasa!